It's been a long time since I've acted.
Tom, excellent choice on the song this week. No, you got nothing to say, Tom. Come on, you know you picked this because it's Leo Santa Cruz.
I wanted El Mariachi Loco, but you wouldn't play that.
That has a special significance here in LA. One of our Adrian Gonzalez, former first baseman for the Dodgers for several years, used that as his walk-up song. Would be pretty fun if a boxer came out to that song. But anyway, that's not what we're here for, to discuss music. We are here for a podcast. This is part one of two. So if you wanted to hear about previews about, you know, Alberto Machado getting upset and Jose Ramirez nearly getting upset and Gervonta Davis making a statement in, and that statement was something along the lines of, I will beat Vasily Lomachenko, then go back and listen one podcast and then come back to this one, because this one is all about the previews. We will talk about the news from the past week, as well as some of the news that's popped up this week. We're recording this on Wednesday night. And we have a podcast for you today, and I want to say that we're going to do a giveaway, another one. I'll just say this, to encourage you to listen to the whole podcast. I'll tell you at the end what it's going to be. But if you live in LA, it's going to be pretty cool. And if you don't, that's all right, because I've set it up so that if you live in LA or if you don't live in LA, you still get a prize. But you got to listen to the end of the podcast where we will tell you what you can win and how to win it. So anyway, Sunday Puncher Podcast, this is what you're listening to. I'm the host, and Tom over there, say hi, Tom.
How's it going? Always happy to be on.
That's the other host. So Leo Santa Cruz will be fighting Rafael Rivera. Very inspiring fight. Very one of the best fights that is on the schedule right now. Amongst all boxers, why should we care about this fight? This is sarcasm, guys. Tom, make a case. Why should we care about this?
Oh boy, I'll put my PBC shill hat on and do my best. No, seriously, this is Leo Santa Cruz, number one featherweight in the world. I think that's a pretty easy argument at this point that he's number one. Guys like Oscar Valdez and Frampton have really fallen off. Guys like Warrington haven't really made a case to compete with him. Gary Russell, very talented as well, but he's too inactive. So I think Leo Santa Cruz, pretty clear number one at the division. Fighting a guy who has been competitive in his only two losses. His only clear loss was against Jojo Diaz, who's another top five, top 10 featherweight. So reasonably good, you know, B side in with a very clear and appealing A side. And he's never been stopped, was never stopped in those two fights. So, you know, there's a clear goal for Leo Santa Cruz there. It's got not a bad undercard with the Omar Figueroa versus John Molina, so it should be a fun night of boxing.
You didn't even try that hard, and so I'm going to have to pick up the slack here, because you did not sell me on watching this fight. And for very obvious reasons, I think, look, Rafael Rivera, not inspiring. And when we get guys who aren't that good in with Leo Santa Cruz, you know, here's the thing. Why this is worthwhile to watch. Because Santa Cruz has an action style. And while he may be way more skilled than the guys he fights, Santa Cruz doesn't exactly do a boring 12-round outclassing. He goes to war. Santa Cruz is one of the few fighters in the sport who's absolutely committed to, rather than being perfect, and everyone complains about that. Isn't this right, Tom? Doesn't everybody complain that the importance of being undefeated is just killing boxing? Am I lying? Did I make this up?
In the good old days, fighters would fight the fights.
Right.
Hagler, Duran, and Leonard would fight each other every 2 weeks.
Well,
back in the good days.
Well, that's not helping the case here, but like the sentiment that being undefeated and winning every single fight, that is what's killing boxing and guys protecting themselves so that they can keep that. Well, here's the thing. Leo Santa Cruz is a fighter who does not care about wins and losses. And there are only a few of them in the sport of boxing right now today. And Leo Santa Cruz is one of them, who when he goes out, it's how can I entertain? How can I get people excited about watching me fight? And what that means is that his fight with Rafael Rivera, while he's going to win, unless Rafael Rivera gets lucky with a Hail Mary, it will be fun to watch. And you, even when Leo Santa Cruz fought Chris Avalos, okay, that was a mismatch. Nobody has ever mistaken Chris Avalos as a legitimate top 20 fighter in the sport of boxing. Just never happened. But Leo Santa Cruz went 8 rounds, battered Avalos, but there was some give and take, and it was a fun enough fight that you don't look back at that fight and say, wow, that was a waste of my time. You know, it wasn't boring. If you're somebody who's like, I got to watch all the boxing, there are certainly worse fights than this one. I mean, it's like the Ray Beltran fight from last weekend, where it's like, Beltran probably wasn't losing that fight, but Beltran made it interesting. He made it exciting. There was some action. And that's why, as far as the main event goes, while it's a mismatch for sure, and I'm saying this, like, if I'm saying something is a mismatch, you know that I've done my homework. I've gone in the past and say this isn't a mismatch. And then, oh, what do you know? It's a close fight. Yeah, because people just kind of look at records and think that's a mismatch. This isn't a mismatch. And what the reason why you watch this card is because of the undercard. Like you briefly mentioned, but, you know, now we're going to get into it. The undercard is very good. Like, the undercard has Cesar Juarez versus Ryosuke Iwasa, Carlos Licona versus DJ Criel, and Omar Figueroa versus John Molina Jr. You can't get much better than that when you're throwing an undercard on with different types of fights and all promise to be interesting. Which fight, or do you have anything to respond to from what I said?
I feel like there does need to be a bit of a dissenting opinion. I mean, it's not a home run, but it's not bad. You know, this is not going to be Gervonta Davis against Hugo Ruiz, where it's just over in the first round and barely anything happened. You know, there should be, you know, again, would I rather see Leo Santa Cruz versus Gary Russell Jr.? Yes, but, you know, that's a totally different tier of fight. For what this is, not the worst dance partner for Santa Cruz. That's really the point that we're making. We're not trying to pretend this is an A-plus fight. But it's a live body, and it should be good action, good entertainment.
Right. Yeah. You know, the main event could be a lot worse. That's the moral of the story, and this one will probably be entertaining. But the undercard is good. And there's a couple of fights that I didn't even mention that that are interesting to look out for. The first one, and we're not going to really go into these, so that's why I'm going to toss them out there. Jerry Perez versus Ivan Benitez. That's on the undercard. Jerry Perez is 10-0. He's a super featherweight prospect. I think he's pretty good. I'm not going to sit here, so don't misquote me if he gets upset or loses it within the next 2 years and be like, oh, well, you said he's good. Listen, I think he's all right. I think he's pretty good. You know who I think is really good too? Gabriel Flores Jr., who was on the Jose Ramirez Zepeda undercard from this past weekend. Looks really good. But Jerry Perez looks pretty solid. He's fighting Ivan Benitez, who's 12-2, coming off a loss. But hey, when you got 10 win, when you've only got 10 fights, you fight this kind of opponent. And then there's also Sebastian Fundora, who is a freak show in the sport of boxing. He's 6'4", fighting at 154 pounds. And he's fighting an undefeated fighter, a guy called Donnie Marshall, who's going to have some height. He's 6 feet tall, also fights at 154. Actually, no, he hasn't fought at 154 literally ever. He's fought around the division. But anyway, so those are two interesting fights.
Well, and heavier. Like, he's not a guy coming. When you say he hasn't fought in the division, normally people would think he's coming up. He's right. Coming down.
Right. No, this isn't somebody fighting Oscar De La Hoya. that is an inside joke for an upcoming Patreon podcast, which... you'll have to be up on there to know what I'm talking about with that. But anyway, let's talk about the undercard. Cesar Juarez versus Ryosuke Iwasa. Do you know why this is significant?
I don't. Please inform me.
All right. So Cesar Juarez, what do you know him for?
I really don't remember who he is. It's funny. BoxRec has this as the most significant fight on the card.
They read my mind, I think.
Yeah, I really don't,
you don't remember.
Remember,
like, Cesar Juarez losing to Nonito Donaire? Remember when Donaire went back down to 122 and got a title?
Oh God, what card was that? Oh, it was one of the
that was
True
on
TV,
TV
top
it was the
rank
first
cards,
True TV
right?
Card. And then
wow,
Yeah, and then do you know who Isaac Dogbay knocked out? Who he stopped to win a world title? Cesar Juarez. Okay. So like obviously I'm not doing that great of
It's
a
funny, I
job
remember
at
that
like
card too. That was on, was that was broadcast in the United States somewhere, right?
the Dogbay Juarez fight. I don't remember that
I
being
feel like it was
broadcasted.
on some fringe network. Like I remember hearing about when that
Like
was
Dazen?
a different fringe channel. Anyway, I'm not going to worry about it. Sorry. But yeah, that was the first time I heard of Dog Bay.
Just on the subject of Dazen, I listened to this podcast today, and it's about sports media and stuff, and Dazen came up, and the guy called it, this is my favorite pronunciation probably so far, he called it Dazone.
Well, there you go.
Anyway, he's fighting Ryosuke Iwasa. Do you remember what he like where he where you should know him from?
Oh God, you're really embarrassing me here. My boxing knowledge just doesn't go that deep when it comes to the 122-pound division.
Look, I listener, if you're at home and you're just like, I don't know either, it's okay. So Iwasa lost to TJ Doheny, which is why TJ Doheny has a world title. Okay, this isn't all coming together like I thought it would. But
God,
anyway,
that was
what
an
is the
ESPN Plus
significance?
card. God, how did I miss that? Anyway, yeah.
What's the significance here?
Oh, it was
Well,
from Japan. Okay.
yeah, Japan.
Yeah.
Not the place where Naoya Inoue will fight next, but in Scotland. But we'll get to that.
Oh, God.
Cesar Juarez and Ryosuke Iwasa fighting is significant for one reason. They fight at 122 pounds. Now, that in itself is not like the most inspiring thing. However, PBC signed Luis Nery. And this is what it looks like when they say, we've signed Nery. We have some guys at 122. We're going to make this division start to happen on our side of the pond, or on our network, or whatever we call this, on our
They're
divide.
building a little ecosystem, as I call it.
Exactly. So Cesar Juarez versus Ryosuke Iwasa. These guys, winner gets to face Nery or Brandon Figueroa or even Guillermo Rigondeaux. Like these guys are former world title challengers, former world champions. And that means that you get to have Brandon Figueroa beat one of these guys and elevate him just a little bit. And while in the short term, the division isn't going to turn around because these two guys are fighting, but these are building blocks, and it's why watch this fight. And I think it'll be an interesting fight. I think Owosso is a very good not a very good fighter. He's a very interesting fighter in that he's defensively challenged. And Cesar Juarez tends to get himself into wars. So I think this will be a fun fight. And let's talk about Omar Figueroa versus John Molina Jr. Like, are you looking forward to this fight?
Yeah, definitely. This is the clear attraction on the undercard for me. It definitely on paper looks like it could be a fight of the year. That said, Figueroa has been out of the ring for a while, a lot of inactivity, only one fight since 2015.
And he beat up Robert Guerrero at Barclays. Were you there?
It was at the Nassau Coliseum. Yeah, I was
Oh,
there.
God.
Absolutely walked through him. Totally crazy fight. Yeah, and then Omar Figueroa had another come from behind victory over Ivan Redkach in his last fight, and that was straight off of getting absolutely annihilated by Terence Crawford. But he had a fight of the year over Lucas, or not over, he lost the fight, but a fight of the year 5 years ago with Lucas Matisse, had a very exciting win
I was
over
there.
Ruslan Provodnikov in 2016. Sent Provodnikov into retirement. So I think this could mesh really well. Both guys punch really hard. 140 is a good division for both of them, even though they had fought at 135 for both their career. They're both known for having a hard time making weight. I think this is going to be good for both of them and a chance to really step forward. Whoever wins this fight, Figueroa is undefeated. I think if he gets this win, he'll be sort of. You know, it's a good opponent for him to come back. You know, speaking of like Keith Thurman was another guy who'd been out of the ring for a long time. You know, Figueroa, this is a chance for him to reestablish himself. And for Molina, you know, if he takes Figueroa's O, this will, again, give him a chance to get another potentially interesting fight.
Yeah, it's interesting that in 2013, Omar Figueroa was basically like, it didn't matter which side you were on, whether you were on Team HBO or Team Showtime. Everyone loved Omar Figueroa. He was young. He looked like he had a lot of power. He got himself into a war with Nihito Arakawa that many thought was the fight of the year in that year, and they were wrong, but they thought it was. And
fight of the year candidate at worst.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And then things started to go downhill from there with Omar Figueroa. He goes on to fight Jerry Belmontes, who had troubled him in the amateurs and troubled him as a professional. And then and it was really weird because Belmontes had lost, I believe it was three of his last five fights. And like, I'm just looking at his box rec now. If you look at like after Omar Figueroa, he literally went on a four-fight losing streak, 1-2 against, you know, mixed opposition. One dude was 4-22, the other one was 21-0, and then lost his next two fights, and then he's basically just been out of the sport. But Jerry Belmontes gave one hell of a performance against Omar Figueroa. I guess that he just brought the best out of him. And then he fights Daniel Estrada, he fights Ricky Burns, fights Antonio DeMarco, and it was like he just fell off the face of the earth. And we know that he has some trouble with substance and things like that. And, you know, hopefully he's over that because, again, I think you stated he's been out of the ring for over a year and a half, almost 2 years. And he's coming back. And he's just one of those fighters that, you know, you think of a modern day what if. He's it. Like, I don't think there's a better modern day what if than Omar Figueroa. And it's not like he didn't go, like, you know, some injury prevented him from boxing, or in the case of, I think it was Omar Henry, where he passed away. It's more like this guy, things got in the way of him fulfilling his potential. And that's obviously part of the battle. And this is something that if you watch, say, wrestling, there's instances like this all the time where guys, we just never know how good they are because for whatever reason, things get in the way of them fulfilling on themselves. But it'll be interesting to see if Omar Figueroa at nearly 30 years old can turn things around. I think he turns 30 this year, later this year. And, you know, he'd be a really interesting addition at welterweight. There's guys out there that he could fight. Adrian Broner, that fight was supposed to happen, but Broner got arrested, and then Omar Figueroa got arrested, and that never got to happen. But I think at welterweight, if he comes back, is explosive against John Molina Jr., maybe one more fight, and then you have another welterweight at PBC with the ability to draw. So this is definitely a fight to look out for. John Molina should give him one hell of a fight. But again, John Molina Jr. is kind of a wild card because he went to absolute war with Lucas Matisse, nearly beats Matisse, and then puts on a clinic against Ruslan Provodnikov. Although I guess anyone who can jab could put on a clinic against Provodnikov. So that might be overstating things a little bit. But anyway, this should be a good fight. And the other fight on the undercard...
Very quick. Are you sure it's at welterweight? Or I thought it was going to be at 140.
If it's at 140, one of them's missing weight. I can guarantee that. One of them is going to miss weight.
I mean, it's really hard to say what shape Figueroa is going to come in. But just another comment. I mean, I don't need to split hairs, but I mean, I was never that high on him, and I think most people weren't that high on him either. It's not like he looked like, you know, a future superstar type prospect. I mean, he had a huge amount of first round knockouts early in his career, huge amount of knockouts in general, but I mean, it was against very, very low level of opposition. And, you know, he had that war with Nihito Arakawa, which is kind of a double-edged sword. Like, it was super exciting, but I mean, it also showed a lot of flaws from him. I mean, I would say before he fell off, best case scenario for him was maybe like the way we view Jose Ramirez right now, where it's like undefeated, looks like he has some star power, but maybe a level below in talent. But It will be interesting. I mean, I don't want to skip ahead too much, but if he wins and comes out of it, I mean, there are a lot of interesting places he could go. I mean, I think an Adrian Broner fight would be a no-brainer. I mean, you could also, similar to Jose Ramirez potentially fighting Crawford, like, if you have a guy with that undefeated record, as you were saying about a name at welterweight, I mean, he could definitely end up being an opponent for any of the top PBC welterweights. I mean, just having that undefeated record, I mean, even if his history is a little bit spotty, I think they could definitely do a promotion with that.
Don't know about that comparison. I it just doesn't fit for me. It's close, but it just doesn't quite fit for me. But yeah, close enough. And the comparison, obviously, I'm talking about is Figueroa to Gilberto Ramirez.
Jose Ramirez.
Could be both, actually.
Yeah, I was actually deciding when I was thinking of the take, like, which one would I prefer to refer to him. Going with Jose Ramirez, since he fought last weekend. He's fresh in my mind. I think that's a pretty good comparison.
Yeah. Let's move on. We have so if you want to listen to us preview Rob Brandt versus Kayson Beysangerov, you should go back 2 episodes where we mistakenly previewed that fight because we thought it was coming up last weekend, and it's not. So we have this pretty funny exchange finding out that Kayson Beysangerov is promoted by Boombox Promotions, which we're not going to redo because it was kind of an organic thing of us finding out that. But what are your general thoughts about this?
I think it's a good fight. Rob Brandt's a top 10 guy at 160. His opponent is really completely unknown, so it's hard to get too excited about it, but happy to see Rob Brandt in. And his opponent at least has the appearance of respectability. He's undefeated, he's only fought in the Ukraine, doesn't have the best record, doesn't have any signature wins, but it's something. Probably won't get blown out, but really don't know enough about him, and interested to see the presence that Boombox Promotions brings into the ring. I don't know. Do you have any more in-depth thoughts? I actually tried to research this more and look up some information on Beysangerov and really couldn't find much. He's only 21, and there just really doesn't seem to be a lot of depth to his career. Seem to be a lot of substance to it.
I don't really have a lot of thoughts about this card. I do want to make a correction. I said Sebastian Fundura is 6'4". That's false. He's actually 6'6". He might even still be growing.
Yeah, he's fought on a lot of PBC undercards. So if you've seen like PBC on Fox cards and there's some guy who looks like a spider person, I don't know, for a lack of... Yeah,
like just Kevin Durant.
Slenderman is a better... Yeah. So if you've seen Slenderman fighting on a PBC on Fox under... Or PBC on FS1 undercard, that's who you're looking at.
Actually, the only times I really have just lose my mind in fights is when prospects get hurt or beat up. Like, that's for some reason, anytime, I'm watching, Fury versus Wilder, and I'm not losing my mind that much when Wilder drops Fury. I'm like, whatever. But then, when Sam Eggington lost to whoever he lost to, I just lost my mind. And it's just so funny to me. And Sebastian Fundura's last fight was hilarious because Jermell Charlo was on commentary, Fundura got hurt, and it was just like a wild back and forth fight, and Charlo is making digs at Fundura and just kind of laughing at him because his defense was so bad. That I one of the most fun fights for me of last year. I would definitely recommend it if you can look it up on YouTube. Whoever it was that he fought last, it was a good fight.
I'm on Google image search now for Fundura, and it really there are so
dude,
many funny
like
pictures.
Manute Bol.
Yeah, Manute Bol. I was gonna go for if you're at a Ripley's Believe It or Not museum, and they have just pictures of the people who are freakishly fat or tall and he's just towering over people in cartoonish ways, and he fights at 154. It's so
imagine
strange.
He's the same size as Anthony Joshua.
Yeah, it's
I think if Fundura lifts a lot of weights, he could be the size of Anthony Joshua.
Well, he's only 21.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you'd think he's going to grow into that frame, and, the sky's the limit. I mean, is he going to end at cruiserweight,
They need to get him on some skill boosters because he might even grow a little more. But
Yeah, we'll have to
I'm
see
really
if he
excited to
retires
see him
for if
fight.
he retires for quote retires for the year, gets out of the drug testing pool and comes back and he's a super middleweight. Yeah,
Nah,
but
he needs to go to
before that
heavyweight.
happens, I'm
I
not
need
gonna
to see this guy fight Joshua.
stations.
I seriously, I am so excited to see this guy up close and personal. Also, Carlos Balderas is on the undercard.
Oh, you're going to be at this card, right?
Yeah, I'm gonna be there. This will be at the Microsoft Theater in downtown LA, which is
Okay,
right
yeah, they're
across the
doing a ton
street.
of stuff at that, and they're doing the, well, we'll get into that, but they're doing the Spence Garcia press conference
Yeah,
beforehand. You're going to get that, right?
I actually cannot be there for that because it's happening super early in the day. It's like at 11:30 a.m. Yeah, and I'm not
Really?
free until 2 o'clock. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, usually they do those like they do that at the Barclays Center a lot for the PBC shows, and usually they do it like right before the first fight starts, or like kind of overlapping with the fights at the bottom of the undercard.
Yeah, so this is super early. I want to talk about a little bit, at least, about the Rob Brandt because that was
But
all messed
sure.
up.
We'll get back to that. Sorry, I got
I actually have I
sidetracked
have
with
nothing to say
from
about
the
the main event because I'm just like, I have nothing to say about Beisanggrov. Rob Brandt has not convinced me that he's a top middleweight, and I really beating Ryota Murata does not convince me. And so I want to talk about the undercard because we will see the return of Michaela Mayer, who I am a big fan of. I think Michaela Mayer is great. And actually, what happened to Joshua Greer? Oh yeah, his fight is pending approval. Maybe he had a change in opponent or something. But Joshua Greer is on the undercard. He's got a loss, but it came early in his career, if I'm not mistaken. And Greer is, I think he's pretty good. He's definitely one of the younger fighters out there who's unproven that I'm watching. And Michaela Mayer, I believe, is the most talented female fighter in the world. She doesn't have the accomplishments. She isn't being matched like she is. But I think when the smoke clears, Michaela Mayer will be the one left standing. And, Clarissa Shields, if she beats Christina Hammer, obviously I have to give her credit, and she deserves all the credit right now. Clarissa Shields, without a doubt, is the number one pound for pound female fighter in the world. Don't at me with that Cecilia Bracket stuff. You need to take that HBO out your because it's nonsense. Cecilia Bracket's last two fights have been pretty bad, and she's been dropped. While her accomplishments merit being ranked amongst the top, her performance has not, and therefore Clarissa Shields takes that spot. And of course, I got to give props to Amanda Serrano. Katie Taylor is definitely in the conversation. And however, I think Michaela Mayer is different. Like, if you watch her fight, she does not fight like no, like normal female fighters do. So that's why I think she's got such a bright future in front of her. The sport of female boxing should be centered around her. Like, she should be like the face of it. But whatever, we don't need to go too much further into that because we're about to lose our listeners, I think. So we'll just move on.
Yeah, Michaela Mayer makes for good TV. I think she's definitely a level below the other names that you mentioned: Amanda
Right
Serrano, Katie
now, but
Taylor,
she has the
Clarissa
talent.
Shields. She's just been in with such a lower level of opposition. Like you see those other fighters, they are trying to find the top fighter every time out. Unifying, getting a new belt, a new division, former champs. Like she's really just, who can we find in a gym? And that's who she's fighting against. Like
Hey,
it's
I
just a
looked at
much lower
Cecilia
level of
Bracket's
opposition.
box rec. Sounds like you just described her resume.
I also didn't mention Cecilia Bracos among the top people. I don't know if that's a hot take, but I think her resume and her accomplishments are way overrated. I think people hear that she's a draw in Europe and think that that suddenly makes her number one pound for pound, and that's really not the correct
Well, I
logic.
think it's actually the four titles. That's easier we're not going to get into this. We're going to talk about Marcos Maidana. Yeah, we'll just talk about Maidana. I skipped over a couple of things, but we'll just go back. Marcos Maidana announced that he will be making his return to the ring, and it will be under the PBC banner. He's going to be paid very well. he will have a one fight tune up, and then they say that he will be rematching Adrian Broner. What are your thoughts on this?
I mean, it's absolute madness, and I'll believe it when I see it. I'm assuming that there's a weight stipulation in his contract. I mean, I guess that's built in, right? Because he needs to make weight in order to do any of these fights.
You know, from the recent pictures I've seen of him, I don't think weight's going to be a problem.
Is he trimmed down?
Yeah, he has.
The last pictures I saw on Instagram, it was still the sort of drug lord Madonna, 400 pounds, and oh my god, he looks terrible. Were you being sarcastic?
No, I'm not. I saw a picture. I was like, hey, his face is looking a little slim.
I mean, he was at a show at the Barclays, like, because his brother fights for the PBC, so yeah, he's been, Fabian, you know, he's at those fights, and yeah, he's fat as shit. I've sent you a million pictures during this chat, but yeah, again, not sure if sarcastic.
I know.
This picture from October 19th on his Instagram is just unbelievable. Definitely, like, you know, on this chat, Google image search Sebastian Fundura, and yeah, check out Madonna's Instagram if you're not up to speed. He's one of the best follows on Instagram, and as far as boxing people go.
Okay, he's definitely skinnier in the picture you just sent than the one before.
I mean, the one where he's showing off all of his chins.
Oh, my God. Tom's just now just going through my Donna's Instagram and sending me pictures. Anyway, look, I think the biggest thing for my Donna is just what division could he actually fight in? And I think if he knew that he could only fight at, say, 168 or 160, I don't think he'd come back. I think there's a level of responsibility that he would have over himself and his health and everything that he wouldn't sell himself out to potentially get really hurt by someone like a Jermall Charlo by fighting at 160. I think he's looked at it and said, I can make 150, 154, somewhere around that range, and I can go back. And there's guys close enough at welterweight who would be willing to go up and fight me. And if you're Keith Thurman, actually, I don't know about Thurman. I think Thurman and Spence really can't afford to fight Maidana. I think that wouldn't be good, especially Spence, given he's already fighting Mikey Garcia. I don't know how many passes he's going to get, and he might be using it up right now against Mikey Garcia. But I think Danny Garcia versus Marcos Maidana is a great fight. I think that's one that, if I'm Danny Garcia, I move up to do. And Adrian Broner is really weird because, one, of course, everyone would love to see the rematch. But, like, Broner is a small 147-pound fighter. He was when they first fought. And we're going to expect Broner to go up to 150, 150-something to fight Broner. Or, sorry, to fight Maidana. That doesn't seem very smart. But, again, we've talked about this on the podcast before. Broner's not really like, he ain't in this game. And if you think Broner's in this game to like be pound for pound number one and win titles, shame on you. You are clearly not understanding how boxing works for some guys. Some guys, they have to get a title. Rob Brandt without a title is irrelevant. Am I wrong?
Yes. I mean, yeah, there's a lot I could potentially respond to, but, yes, regarding that point, I mean, some people are just draws and some people need a belt in order to draw any interest.
Now, what's more interesting, Broner versus Pacquiao or Broner versus, Josh Taylor? Is Broner versus Pacquiao, like, that's going to
be, yeah,
I'm
like,
money.
Where did that name come from?
Well,
yeah,
the point
I
is,
mean,
Josh Taylor versus Broner is a better fight between two guys who are rated within the top 3-4 at 140 pounds, whereas Broner versus Pacquiao, these dudes are knocking on number 10's door, and that's a way bigger fight because, one, they got names. That's what Broner's here for, is to fight other names, and Maidana coming back, that's a name. So what did you want to respond to?
Oh, I mean, one, yes. From Broner going forward, I want only shit shows. And
thank
this
you.
Fits,
thank you. Those are
this
my
fits
favorite
in with
kind of
that
fights.
Just fine. That said, when you said Spence can't get away with this, look, Floyd's breakout performance on pay-per-view was against Arturo Gatti, which at the time everyone who knew better was calling a gross mismatch and a farce. And that, you know, became his breakout performance in the sport. Like, you know, you look at Oscar De La Hoya's career. He fought super faded Julio Cesar Chavez, you know, twice.
In more ways than one, he was faded.
But anyway, so I got derailed. If they can get some semblance of Maidana back in the ring, I think that could bring some amount of casual pay-per-view buys. I mean, I think that's really what it's about. Like, hardcore boxing fans will sneer, but it brings some casual pay-per-view buys to, you know, if you look at, like, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. versus Canelo. Again, hardcore boxing fans thought it was a farce, didn't really care that much, did over a million buys. I'm not saying that Maidana is that level, but I think that he does bring some of that casual crossover appeal. He's very well known. His fights with Floyd Mayweather did extremely well. He's remained extremely popular online since then. So, when you say Floyd or Thurman wouldn't want, I mean, a win over Maidana would be a huge boost to any of those guys, even at this point. But like I said, we really need to see him back in better shape. I mean, I'm like I said, I'll believe it when I see it.
You know he's going to fight Robert Guerrero, right?
I mean, Robert Guerrero's back.
Hey.
Omar Figueroa had retired him, but he was back.
I told the story.
By the way, the winner of Figueroa, Molina, you know? But God, Robert Guerrero. It's crazy to think that fight could happen. We could also get the Victor Ortiz everyone's been waiting for.
Ooh, oh, man.
Victor Ortiz.
Loser has to plead guilty to their crimes.
Yeah, I mean, the shit shows just go on and on. I mean, Andre Berto is still waiting in the wings. Like, you say, like, Spence is not going to fight a guy like that, but if Spence can keep making welterweight, I mean, they can keep, you know, and he becomes some version of a pay-per-view draw, he can rack up title defenses against these guys.
There are lots of, like, opponents out there for Maidana, and each one makes me more excited. So I've told you about Robert Guerrero. And, like, if you're sitting at home and you're like, that's a terrible fight. Robert Guerrero, blah, 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 hasn't been good since he was at 125 pounds or whatever, blah, 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 okay? I've told this story on the podcast before, but if you're a new listener, I'll tell you again. So I was going to Wilder Fury. I got dropped off. I'm walking to the Staples Center. Some dude pops out a car, and he's like, hey, do you know what a Staples Center is? And I'm like, yeah, I'm going there right now. And so I was like, just follow me. So he's like, oh, hold on. My girl's got to get out of the car. This dude was trying to leave her in the car with these other people because they were taking Uber, pool, whatever. He was all impatient. And so I'm like, all right. So I'm standing there waiting. And I'm like, I need to get in here because I'm going to miss the undercard. And then so we start walking. And I'm like, yeah, it's just right here. We got to walk around these buildings. And you couldn't see the Staples Center. And I said, like, so you're here for the fight, right? He's like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, cool. You like boxing? He's like, yeah. And then I say, well, who are you here to see? You're here to see Wilder Fury? He's like, I'm actually here to see Robert Guerrero. And I'm like, yeah? He's like, yeah, we spent $500 for these tickets. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah, we're from up north, but we wanted to come down to see him. And I'm like, all right, cool, yeah. You should probably have some good tickets if you spent $500 and there's going to be some good fights, so you'll be entertained all night long. Which was my way of saying, yeah, your money, you're going to get your money's worth elsewhere. But anyway, that's boxing right there. You think these guys you see on the you think the main eventers sell most of the tickets? No. In New York, you have a Sean Monahan, you have a Chris Algieri. Who else are the local draws in New York? I'm sure there's some that I probably don't know because I'm not from there.
Yeah, Jason Sosa.
Konaki, of course.
Yeah, Konaki. That was...
Are there any guys that are, like, kind of, like, really small, like, they will never get televised that you know, like, that are familiar? Like, I know he hasn't fought in a while, but Nick Arce was super popular here. Like, he could sell out, like, a quarter of the StubHub Center just by himself, and he'll fight, like, third on the card. Like third from the
Sorry,
open.
Julian Sosa, by the way, is the guy that I meant,
Oh,
who
Julian
has
Sosa.
never fought on a televised, has never been on TV as far as I know. But yeah, he always sells
Yeah,
a
I've
few
heard of
hundred
Julian.
tickets. The female fighters always sell a lot of tickets. Heather
My girl
Hardy,
Heather
which
Hardy,
people,
yeah.
Amanda Serrano,
That's
they
my
always
heart.
have big cheering sections with tons of t-shirts. I mean, Kanaki was the big one. He had fought off TV for a long time before he started fighting on TV.
So anyway, this is a long way of saying that Guerrero
Yes.
could be fighting Maidana when he comes back, and they will be in the Staples Center. Like, you laugh, but I swear,
I mean,
people will come
where are
out for
we
that.
going with this? My God.
Anyway, but I had one more thing for this. If Guerrero's not available, Alfredo Angulo.
Oh, Jesus. You know, that fight
Come
could
on.
actually happen because I think that's one of the things with Maidana. I think they said that it's likely he'll return at 154. So, Jesus, what does that look
Well,
like?
Angulo hasn't fought there in a while. I think his last fight was like at 168, but whatever.
I mean, look, why don't they just look? Maidana's going to be coming down on his way down to 147 to fight Adrian Broner. Why doesn't he fight Chavez Jr. at 168?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Like, there's like dust off Chavez Jr.
Lots of shit shows all around.
Seriously, they could. That might be a pay-per-view. I'm not even kidding you. Maidana versus Chavez Jr. They could legit sell a few hundred thousand buys, I think.
I mean, stranger things have happened. Speaking of that, I know we're just digression after digression on this podcast, but can you imagine if they get Chavez Jr. rehab back? I mean, he was originally supposed to fight on the Fury Wilder undercard. If they get him back and he fights
Ooh.
David Benavidez or Caleb Plant, I mean, what a huge boost
I
that would
just
be
want to
for
see him fight
those
Angulo, though. I don't care about those fights.
guys. It'll be a standalone pay-per-view.
I'd buy it. Not for $100, though. It's got to be a
Okay.
little lower than that. But yeah, I think if Chavez Jr. comes back, whoops Angulo, he's gonna fight David Benavidez or Caleb Plant, like you said. Like that. Like if that's not the plan, they're not doing their job. You have
Or
to
the
find a
Miguel
way.
Eubank winner. Yeah.
Oh,
He'll be in the mix.
Eubank versus Chavez Jr. That's the fight right there. Chavez Jr., Eubank Jr., the dads, overbearing dads. Imagine the PBC countdown. That would be the greatest of all time. When they do the face to face, they wouldn't even have Chavez Jr. and Eubank Jr. talking to each other. It would just be the dads. Dude,
I feel like Chavez doesn't know who Chris Eubank is.
maybe. Anyway, so Vasily Lomachenko versus Anthony Carolla. Let's talk about some actual relevant boxing now. So I'll skip this one and talk about, no, I'm just kidding. Vasily Lomachenko versus Anthony Carolla. So basically Lomachenko was got the okay to fight Richard Comey as a unification, but then Comey's injured, so the WBA is like, we take it back. You got to fight Carolla, who's your mandatory, which is pathetic. But anyway, they keep postponing the purse bid. Are there any more details that we need to say or that I've left out?
We don't know. I mean, that's fascinating because it what's interesting about that story that was a BoxRec headline is that it implies that Matchroom and Top Rank are negotiating behind the scenes related to this fight. So they said basically they either need to make the fight or they need to put up a suitable replacement, which I guess would relate to the WBA rankings or some type of unification. So
Interesting. That's actually really interesting that they said a suitable replacement, because given the level of Anthony Carolla, that could be anyone.
but it is interesting because who else could that mean if it's not Comey, or would they try to delay that date? I mean, Top Rank, they have the thing, which is not bad at all. There are lots of positives that they, stake out when the opponent is fighting next, and they, try to build for that. They try to get as long as possible. They get the, try to get the long tail of ticket sales in. But when you plant your flag and you say, "I'm going to fight on that date," and your opponent falls through,
Yeah.
then then you might have to fight Anthony Carolla, I guess, is the moral of the story. I don't know. It will be interesting to see if Lomachenko will end up sloughing off that WBA belt at 135. It's kind of weird.
It's probably the smart thing to do.
I don't know. I mean,
well, let me ask you this.
Belts have a lot of value. I mean,
they do, but is the WBA the worst sanctioning body when it comes to appointing mandatories? Like, who's the worst at, like, just sending the most ill-prepared person in for title fights as a mandatory? Is it the WBA?
I mean, that's a loaded question. Like, the IBF has come under fire recently for some really bad mandatories, but that's completely self-selecting. You know, it's like if fighters want to be fight in the W or in the IBF, then they get in those mandatory slots. It's completely egalitarian. I don't know. Can you think of a specific example of the WBA? I mean, this, you're just finding a way to try to shit on Krolla becoming the mandatory, right?
Yeah.
I mean, who did he beat to get into that slot? And did that fight make sense?
Let's see. This is a legit, I'm not sure. Let's Google this. Because I cannot remember. Like, Krolla's basically just disappeared off the face of the earth. No. It was that fight that was super boring. Dodd Jordan. That's what it was. It was on the Hey Bellew rematch undercard. Yeah, this fight was terrible.
It was on the Usyk Bellew undercard.
Oh, it was one of them. Yeah, I knew it. It was Bellew card. Yeah. I remember this fight. It was not very good. It's just really, really odd, I think, that Anthony Krolla is the WBA mandatory. This is the card where Ricky Burns stopped Scott Cardle, Josh Kelly. Yeah. I remember this card now.
Well, it's such a weird dynamic because you would think, like, going back like 2 years, you'd think Krolla is a little bit of a draw. Had those two fights with Jorge Linares, which
they both lost.
Loved. Well, yes, he did. But again, which everyone in the UK loved. Beat Ricky Burns. You know, he's just a popular guy. He's kind of a rocky figure. Took a brick to the head, and somehow that made people fall in love with him in the UK. Oh, cinder block, excuse me.
Get it right.
But yeah, it's weird because, I mean, Lomachenko, you'd think, would be like, you know, a 100-to-1 favorite. And normally you think he'd just take that paycheck, but there's just a weird situation where DAZN wants to win a purse bid and get Lomachenko on their network. So,
oh yeah, because the history suggests that they're good at that.
Yeah, but you wonder. I mean, they're throwing out this massive amount of money to get Joshua to fight in the U.S. They're throwing out, you know, huge amount of money to both Canelo and Jacobs to do that fight. I mean, I feel like DAZN has laid out a clear separation where they will empty their pockets if they feel like it's worth it, but then they will not, you know, blink if they think a fight is not worth it to them. I mean, they really just seem to not care about the lower level. That Golden Boy card last weekend had 500,000 combined purse for the entire card were only $500,000. So I feel like getting Lomachenko on their network is something that they would shell out for, which, you know, again, not the worst thing in the world. Like, the champion, Lomachenko, gets the lion's share of that money. He'd be knocking out a matchroom fighter or at least, you know, soundly beating. So it's just a weird situation. So anyway, again, it's interesting that Top Rank is negotiating behind the scenes with Matchroom. So not really much new news there besides that the negotiations are ongoing, but it will definitely be interesting to see how that shakes out. I mean, that would be hilarious. Can you imagine if Lomachenko dropped the belt to Krolla? The amount of, like, UK idiots who would be saying that Lomachenko is ducking Krolla, the true champ. 135.
Oh, I misinterpreted what you said. I thought you meant, like, he dropped the title, like, he did the job. Like Krolla went over. Then I was like, no, cannot
Riddick
imagine.
Both throw the belt in the garbage.
That's like imagining, like, Hulk Hogan doing a job to Shawn Michaels. It's just not going to happen. But Lomachenko, so Top Rank kind of, they screwed themselves here. They just jinxed themselves. This was like when I would write fight previews like a couple weeks in advance of the fight happening, and then, or do a daily previewing fights, and then the fights get canceled. This is like one of those situations where last year, after Lomachenko beat Jorge Linares, it was announced that his return would be April 13th at the Staples Center. And it was like, okay, cool, Staples Center fight for Lomachenko. And we'd expect that he'd get a good opponent. And we heard the unification between the winner of Kome and Chaniev. And then what do you know? Kome gets injured, jinxed it. And now he's got to go into this purse bid. Do you think Top Rank, like, I would do this. I would say the WBA can make us do a purse bid. If we lose the purse bid, we'll just drop the title. We're not doing the fight. The only way we do this fight is on our terms, and that means it's on our network. So don't even try to purse bid us, because we will just pull out of the bid and then we'll drop the title. Do you think that they would do that?
I think that's very likely what could happen.
I really hope they do.
You'd think they would try to figure out what they're not just going to drop it for no reason. I mean, if they did end up doing that, but so is there a super champion at 135? Is there a, do we know?
No.
Or is that one of the rare divisions where the WBA only has one belt?
You mean only has two belts? They've got to have two. If they only have one, you'd think so. I don't know. I don't think he has the WBA super. This should be the super title, by the way. He should be the super champion.
There's really no logic to it, right?
Well, I think it's also maybe just jinx that Lomachenko's not supposed to fight in LA, because remember he was supposed to fight Beltran here, and then Lomachenko actually got injured. That was supposed to be at the Forum. I was looking forward to that too.
The top three at 135. Lomachenko is the champion. This was the WBA rankings. Second, Rancis Barthelemy.
Ooh, all-time great there.
Third, Robert Easter Jr., which means that if Lomachenko did drop the belt, Krolla would have to fight for a vacant title, presumably against either Rancis Barthelemy or Robert Easter Jr.
Oh, God.
But there's no way Top Rank is letting that belt go. I mean, they're trying to get a belt for Teofimo Lopez. Like, again, they're not going to let that belt just go.
Maybe, I don't know. I'm not even going to talk about this anymore.
Yeah.
We're going to move on. Anthony Joshua versus Jarrell Miller. That fight is finally official. June 1st at Madison Square Garden. We assume is going to be Deontay Wilder versus Tyson Fury. That is going to happen in New York. Are you excited for this, to see Anthony Joshua up close and in person?
I've seen him in person before, but as far as fighting, like I mentioned
with the shirt off.
I'm trying to remember if he took his shirt off at that press conference. He's a pretty shameless guy. He's not too afraid to take his shirt off without much reason.
Well, if you look like him, you know.
Yeah, I had talked about this at the time. Yeah, he has a much better body than Marcos Maidana. Say that to be safe. Much better body.
Maidana has no shame either. He takes his shirt off.
Yeah. look, I mentioned when this fight was, you know, sort of unofficially announced. Now is the official announcement. I thought it'd be fun entertainment. It's nice to get Joshua in the U.S. It continues to be kind of a weird situation that the Fury Wilder rematch is looming, and that presumably is going to be a much bigger event in the U.S. And that's just going to be kind of riding the coattails of that. I mean, I don't have a super amount to look forward to or to add to that. It's interesting. It was rumored that Joshua is going to get paid around $30 million for the fight, which means, again, like DAZN is just going into pocket about $10 million or $20 million more than the fight is worth. And I don't know. I mean, just seeing these giant paychecks these guys are getting, I mean, it really makes you wonder if they're actually getting paid that amount of money, like it's going to show up on the commission. Commission report, or if that is like stock options. Like, it just seems so crazy that they would pay him that much money for that fight.
Yeah. And so it's really weird, because one of the things to look out for with this fight is how everything's going to shake out. So New York is really busy for like a month. They have both the Danny Garcia versus Adrian Granados fight and the Terrence Crawford pay-per-view that are going to go head-to-head. We also have in May and I believe this is going to be Barclays, Julian Williams versus Jarrett Hurd. And then we also have Wilder Fury rematch, and then of course the Joshua and Miller fight. So like, you New York people better, but we're gonna have to give out some free tickets or something to just help you guys out, to, so we can get people in these events, because I'd hate for any of these events to not sell well.
Yeah, man. We've had crowded months before. It kind of ends up not mattering as much as you would think. Like, boxing fans are pretty hungry for this stuff. Like, I think it will be okay. Also, the Joshua is going to bring a different audience than any of the other. You know, like, I was surprised when Canelo fought. And it was kind of a busy fall last December when he fought in New York, and he really just brought in a different audience. Like, it didn't feel like the same people in there as go to, you know, the normal boxing shows, or, you know, some amount, but a huge amount of additional people who are not traditional boxing fans. I think Joshua will be the same way. I think, I think they will sell out the Garden. I don't think that'll be a problem. I think he'll bring a fair amount of people. I think a fair amount of people will come from the UK to see him, a certain amount of, you know, English, I'll just say it that way, a fair amount of English living in the United States will go. You'll have a certain amount of other boxing fans, but it'll be interesting. I mean, I think that one is, again, that's going to do just fine. I mean, I don't think it'll do as well as the Canelo card did, but I think it'll sell out no problem.
Yeah. The other thing is, like, I've said in the past that they're lying about DAZN's money. And what I mean by that is, we heard this huge number for Matchroom Boxing, $125 million a year to spend. And then we get fights like Tevin Farmer versus Joan O'Carroll. And we have fights like Jarrell Miller versus Bogdan Dino. Clearly, $125 million ain't going to Matchroom. And I think where it's going to is specifically with an Anthony Joshua fight, where that is actually like, Canelo's cut is coming out of that 125, and so is Joshua's, and that's why the money that was offered for all these other guys wasn't like enough to get them to hop over. And like, if you're wondering, British fans, why Anthony Joshua isn't fulfilling on his word when he said, "I'm staying in the UK for my next two fights, and I'll be fighting at Wembley. It's all booked." And then we heard about the April 13th date, and Deontay Wilder has to sign the contract. Well, it's John Skipper who's pulling the strings here. John Skipper said, we are going to do whatever it takes so that we have Joshua's next fight here in the U.S. And if we are serious about establishing this streaming service, that means that we need to have Anthony Joshua fighting in the U.S., whether that be to drive subscriptions to the DAZN network, whatever they call it, or to create this big event with Deontay Wilder where they can have a pay-per-view. So, like, John Skipper has a vision for what DAZN's going to be. And Joshua's a pawn in the puzzle. And that's really what we've been seeing playing out. And, you know, some fans, whether you're British or not, we've seen a lot of talk about how Joshua doesn't want to fight with Wilder. Really, just settle down with that nonsense. This is all a game that's being played between executives who probably don't even like boxing. And these guys have no control over what they do. Anything you want to say?
No, I think that's about as much as there is to say about it for now.
If you like this, like, DAZN talk and like getting involved with like who the executives are, you should definitely get on the Patreon feed, because I spend a lot more time than I do here just like telling you about who the players are. Like John Stopher, you know who that is? Probably not.
I don't.
I'm not telling you.
It's a secret to everyone.
He's a very nice guy. Euriorkis Gamboa signed a deal with PBC. No one cares. Moving on. Marcus Brown.
I don't know why you're so rough on him. I mean, there's a very easy take on that, which is he's the Madonna of 130. He's going to be the Madonna of 130. As everything we were just saying about Madonna.
Are you insane? Gamboa can't make 130. He has too many muscles. he got medication for anti-aging, and he'll never make 130 ever again. He's got youthful muscles. Okay. I love Gamboa. Gamboa is one of my favorite fighters. Always will be endeared to me. as he came up, I think anyone who saw him was like, wow. Like, in his prime, Gamboa is perhaps one of the, like, maybe one of the pound-for-pound athletes of in boxing of all time. Like, all time. Go back and watch Gamboa. It was like, he was, imagine the speed of Amir Khan with, like, the power of Deontay Wilder. Like, Gamboa was amazing when he was coming up, but unfortunately, defensively, it just wasn't there. The focus wasn't there. And the fights that he should have taken, they never quite surfaced. You know, that fight with Brandon Rios, or was it Mikey Garcia, or Juan Manuel Lopez, or all
three of them? Yeah, Juanma was the one we were really waiting for.
Yeah, well, it turns out that Gamboa was a jabroni, and Juan Manuel Lopez, also a jabroni, got exposed by Orlando Salido. I wonder if that is a trend in boxing. Anyway, but I love Gamboa, so but I don't really want to talk about him, because what is he going to do, lose to Leo Santa Cruz, lose to Gervonta Davis?
Yeah, he doesn't have a whole lot left. Again, purely saying from a business standpoint, he might be able to draw something, but yeah, I would not look forward to seeing him. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, not only is he faded, his fights that he has now are, you know, boring and ugly, so... Yeah, not to look for, not a lot to look for in what he has left, except for, you know, drawing some money. That's something I think he could help with in those fights.
Should probably go back and lift some weights. And then Marcus Brown is going to be fighting John Pascal in the spring. And just to bring this up, because I don't think we've talked about this on the podcast, ancillary, I think that's the right word, ancillary news, related news to this is that Alexander Vozdik's first defense of his title will be against Dudu Ngumbu. I'm not making up a name. That's real. What do you have to say about these two guys and their first title defenses?
Yeah, so every time we talk about light heavyweight, or at least whenever we've talked about light heavyweight for the last year or so, something we say is that the division is quite fractured. Top Rank does have... Good assortment of guys right now, but you know, it's a fractured division. We don't know exactly what's going to happen with Kovalev. So, and it's up to all of these fighters whenever they fight to try to make a case that they are the guy in the division, you know, and a lot of people were saying that was going to be Bivol, but Bivol in his last few fights hasn't had his best performances, you know, went the distance with Isaac Chalemba, lost some rounds. He's a tricky guy, but didn't set the world on fire.
I'm getting Pascal.
Went the distance, but it, you know, he lost some rounds. And at times looked like he was a little more worried about what Pascal had left in the tank than we were kind of expecting. So it's a good opportunity for Marcus Brown. If he can stop Pascal, he can really make a statement. You know, he'll have a recent direct comparison with Bivol. You know, that said, Pascal is at the way end of his career. He was stopped twice by Sergey Kovalev. So, you know, it would probably be hard for Brown to outdo Kovalev's performances. But, you know, we were saying, as of right now, PBC, it's a little thin. You know, Marcus Brown got a fantastic win over Badu Jack, one of the best wins in the division in the last few years, but doesn't really have too many dance partners. I think it's great for him that they were able to get Pascal. Again, gives him a chance to get back into the discussion of really being a relevant guy. Whereas it, you know, we're kind of wondering, is he just going to get iced out? Is Top Rank just going to, you know, if they have enough of the top guys, they could really just ignore him. But, this gives him a chance to have some relevancy. Regarding the Vozdik fight, it's disappointing. You know, we were saying like about, Aleider Alvarez, like, oh, you know, he lost, but, you know, if he still fought Vozdik, still fought Kovalev again, fought, you know, any of these guys, he's still a guy in the top five or top 10. Pretty good fight still. Like, you know, that's a fight that we should still look forward to, shouldn't complain about. You know, then Vozdik ends up with Dudu Ngumbu instead, who is really just not a very good fighter, you know. Lost to Igor Mikhalkin, who is, you know, so he's Dudu Ngugu is man, I'm totally butchering his name, but Mr. Doodoo,
I think that's
is
how you say
a B-side's B-side.
Yeah.
Right. So it's kind of the reverse.
That's
you know,
like the
it's
get
like,
back fight for John Pascal.
Yeah. I mean, Vosdick is coming off a fantastic win over Adonis Stevenson, you know, tragic circumstance at the end of that fight, but his performance in the fight was very good. And it's a little strange. I mean, this is almost like Zerto matchmaking. Like, why do they need to go that low here? You know, what's that about? Anyway, your thoughts?
Well, I always will give a pass for a new champion on their first fight, whether that be they face their mandatory or they face some guy who is just going to be a defense for the hometown crowd or whatever. And so I don't care. Marcus Brown fighting John Pascal, that's the better fight of the two. And that's saying something, given that we've just seen more of John Pascal. But like if John Pascal had been fighting in Canada for the past 5 years or whatever, you'd probably think, all right, that's all right. Doodoo Ngubu has been doing nothing. And is, John Pascal is just, at least he's been in there with guys whose names you recognize and upset a prospect. And Ngubu has not done anything. And so, yeah, that's the worst of the two, the Ngubu fight. But, like, so what? It's the first defense. So, like, I'm not really, like, bent out of shape about this. They both deserve easy wins or easy fights given, you know, Alexander Vosdick had the tougher fight against Adonis Stevenson. He was hurt in the fight and had to overcome something, and he put on a great performance. Marcus Brown had to, he basically just broke Badu Jack's face. That was a great performance. That was is actually a real tactical, underrated win. I know people will give him credit for beating Badu Jack the name, but the method of victory was actually more impressive than that. Just go back and watch the fight if you don't, but if you don't want to do that, then don't do that either. So anyway, is there anything else we should talk about, Tom, or should we tell these people how to win?
Yeah, one last comment on the Vosdick fight. So just a question I would pose to you. I mean, after the Stevenson fight, a lot of people have him, you know, at least towards the top of 175. I think a lot of people would rate him number one at 75. It's definitely a discussion. You know, it's not a finished argument, but he's up there. Yeah, the question, though, I mean, he was hurt in a few fights ago. He was hurt badly against Adonis Stevenson.
Dropped by Andrew Fonfara?
Yeah, I mean, did he even fight Fonfara?
Yeah.
I'm talking about Vosdick.
Yeah, I'm talking about Vosdick. Come on, brother.
Okay. I'm pretty sure he never fought Fonfara. That really came out of left field.
Oh, it's Karpinski. That's what I'm thinking about.
Yeah, Karpinski, who is also an Adonis Stevenson opponent. Yeah. So do you think there is any, you know, when you see them dropping down the level, do you think there is some version of, we don't want this guy to get caught? I mean, is it kind of like the Zerto?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. The we know something.
Yeah, I mean, do you think it's that, or do you think it's just we want to go a little soft to get him a knockout on TV and not, you know?
I think with Vosdick, yeah, there's a combination of that. I think he had a tough fight against Stevenson, and maybe they're like, we need to get him something in there so he can work out whatever kinks he has, get his confidence back, whatever, so that when we put him in there again with somebody, you know, say Sergey Kovalev, that this guy's going to give us a good shot at, you know, retaining his title and unifying. I think it's a combination of both. It has to be, you know, because there's certainly better opponents that they could have got. And I'm not saying that they necessarily would have gotten a more skilled opponent. I mean, just at least somebody with a name, somebody with a more recognizable name, a Blake Caparello who's still kicking around, like someone like that, that like, you know, Caparello fought on HBO. He fought, I believe, on NBC as well.
And yeah, he fought one of the Durrell brothers, I believe.
Yeah. So, you know, they could have done something like that. But, you know, I think maybe it could be it's a possibility of the two things that you just mentioned. Carl Murat's still out there, by the way. What about him?
Fights we can look forward to at 175 over the next few years. All of these, it's such a fractured division. We can look forward to seeing all these misfits getting called up to act as B-sides to these new champions. I think I'm done with all of those things. I think I'm ready to move on here.
Okay, so that's it for this week. We have gone through all of our news. We have gone through all the fights coming up. If you have any questions, we always answer questions that you have, you know, discussion things on. The last episode, we discussed 140, specifically if there's some explanation for, or actually, this isn't, I'm mistaking the questions. We discussed a question about upsets in boxing, and if, like, or is it the fact that we have a bunch of networks now spreading the talent in boxing thin, and matchmaking has gotten, like, what explains the upsets? Is it just, like, in the water? We took a look at that. And so, yeah, you have questions like that, join the Discord. If you don't know how, just send us a message on, or tweet at us. Can you send us messages on Twitter? I don't know.
Yes.
Okay, cool. And then, so I was thinking we need to do a giveaway. So I have two options here. I'll get you tickets, two tickets, to see the Santa Cruz Rafael Rivera fight or the Sean Porter versus Yordanis Ugas fight at the Dignity House Sports Park. Both are very small venues. It's up to you. Or say you're not from LA and I don't want to leave you out, I'll buy you a t-shirt. Well, we'll buy you a t-shirt from any boxer store. As long as it's not like the Floyd Mayweather t-shirt that's like $80, okay? You gotta keep it reasonable.
Yeah, you want a Danny Swift Garcia shirt? You want a Bronx Bomber shirt?
Bronze Bomber? You want, if
you want one of those those sweet Shango shirts we saw last weekend?
Oh, that I could probably go get one of those from like his gym. Probably it's close by to me. But there's no shortage of boxing related t-shirts out there, as well as the tickets to the fights here in LA. All you got to do, real simple. All you got to do, you got to tweet at us. Let us know you listened. And you tweet at us. How does this work, Tom? So like if you tweet at us and then you include our name in your tweet and then just say something about the episode, hashtag SP giveaway. You got that? You tweeted
us.
Yeah,
I think it doesn't even need to be as firm as that. Give us some version of that. We're not going to be sticklers.
Just use the hashtag SP giveaway. How about that?
Sure. Get right. Get that trending.
So, yeah. What is this, Raw? Hashtag SP giveaway, just so we know, so I can click that hashtag and then all the tweets will pop up. And then whoever I find there, you will be the winner. So I really appreciate you guys listening. As always, you can go over to the patreon.com/SundayPuncher. There's a lot more content there. There's got to be at least 100 episodes. Now, a lot of that stuff isn't evergreen, but some of it is, where you can go back and listen. And it's just like it's still as relevant when it was recorded as it is today. Or maybe I got that backwards. But anything you want to say, Tom, in closing? Your closing remarks? No.
This episode was a little loose, but it was an experiment.
It was a little wild.
We'll decide in the future if we want to continue to do two episodes. I think it's going to be good. I think this was a little bit of a strange one because it was a little bit of a light week on the fight previews. But I think this is going to be good to do two episodes a week. But, you know, let us know what you think about that as well.
Well, I mean, for those of you who actually care, like this is we took four times to record the intro. Just been a lot of things popping up that made this podcast a little tougher than usual to record. Like, I don't know, I mentioned a British fighter and Tom hangs up. That's for real. He literally hung up.
That sort of happened.
I you were upset. I know it. You were like, Anthony Crolla, this is I'm just not gonna do this.
I just threw my headset down.
Yeah. So Tom, thanks as always for coming on. I hope you listener, you appreciate this. If you like this podcast, leave us a rating, leave us a review, subscribe. Those things help. They help us get more listeners. I can't say enough to thank you guys for listening. I hope you guys use the hashtag SP giveaway so you can win something, tickets to a fight or a t-shirt. And yeah, thanks for listening. Got nothing else to say.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Check us out again next week.
Tom likes this song. Chorando se foi, quem dia só me fez chorar. Chorando se foi, quem dia só me fez. I don't think that's Spanish. That does not sound Spanish.